allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Sheldon. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Whitaker. Director Yeo.
Present.
You do have a quorum with seven directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay. Do we have anyone who would like to? Ready online? Okay. Moving on to the consent calendar. Do I have a motion?
Seconds.
Okay, I have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Yes, but I can barely hear it, it's going in and out. So, but I am a yes.
Oh, okay. Which mic? Mike, it says it's on. Yeah, on again. Does that help any?
Yeah, I can hear you now, but a minute ago you said something before you took a. It's okay. I'll let you know. I'll raise my hand or put a chat
Thank
in.
Thank you.
There.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Yes. Aye. Sorry.
Director Yeo?
Yes. Okay.
That motion carries with 8 yes votes with Directors Nguyen and Sheldon absent.
Okay, moving on to informational items. An update on field headquarters recharge operations.
Yes, Madam President, we're approaching the storm season. And so we wanted to give you an update on everything going on up in Anaheim at the Forbay in preparation of the winter rains.
Ben, take it away.
Thank you. Good evening. So a little acknowledgement. I like to recognize the staff who are doing the work out there. These are the different groups. There's about 20 staff members in the field operations group, so about 10% of the district's employees. So we have a maintenance mechanic group, groundskeeping, heavy equipment, recharge operators, they're moving the water around, and then administration. So a quick refresher on the recharge system. It's here in the yellow and blue colors in Anaheim and orange. The district owns 1,600 acres of land in this area. 1,100 acres of it can be wet where the water touches. There's different ways to count up the facilities, but we're sticking with 30 recharge facilities. So some of them are recharge basins, some of them are the river, some of them are a creek, so that's why we use the term facilities. So 4 of those are actually flood control facilities that they let us operate and recharge water in. So if you add up the storage of all those facilities, 25,000 acre feet, we have 11 different pump stations. Most of them are used for dewatering, for emptying a lake to clean it. And we have 4 rubber dams, 2 in the river, that are our workhorses. Just very quickly, the general operational strategy there is to percolate all the water we get. That's our, when water comes in, our first goal is to, in a way, get rid of it, to percolate it. Our second goal would be to store it. So those are kind of our goals as we think about each day, what to do with the water. Last year, last fiscal year, was a record year for surface recharge for the Forbay. It's the highest amount recorded by OCWD in its history, 282,000 acre feet. So if you average that over the year, 252 million gallons per day going in. So that's enough water for 2.3 million people. So how did that happen? Well, we had an above average rain year. The timing of the storms, am I supposed to admit? Okay. the timing of the storms helps. So when it rains and there's a break, we get to receive that water, percolate some of it, and then it creates storage for the next rain. So that timing helps. In particular, Hurricane Hillary came in August, way before the rest of the rain. So we got a huge bump at the beginning of the year off that storm. GRS expanded, so it's producing more than it has before. Prado Dam, through our FIRO efforts and our ongoing coordination with the way they operate, they were more comfortable holding water at higher levels, so that resulted in more storm capture for us. And then because last year was so wet, when this fiscal year started in July, we actually had some of last year's water still in storage. So that goes into this year's percolation number. By the way, that's a picture of about 200 CFS going into Burris Basin. Cleaning. So what we've been focusing on, I should back up. Last time I gave this kind of update to the board was in April. We were full of water everywhere. So now we're in a total different mode where we're getting rid of the water and we're cleaning, getting ready for the next storm season. So out of those 30 facilities, 19 of them have been cleaned already. Seven are, we can't clean. Three of them we're planning to clean, you know, if it doesn't rain. One of them we're not planning to clean this year. Go ahead.
Said seven we can't clean. Why can't you clean them?
So some of, basically they're too deep. So like Santiago, we can't get the water out of it in order to clean the floor. So if you break it down by cleanable area, so far we have 89% of the cleanable areas done, 9% planned, and that 2% we're not planning. That one we're not planning is Santiago Creek. So there's a little extra coordination, a little extra permitting that's not in place for us to tackle that this year. We've been doing maintenance, and the mechanics have also been busy. So our maintenance group's been doing cathodic protection improvements. So that's about adjusting the voltage that's on metal pipelines so that they don't rust. So that's this picture on the bottom right. Is another a cathodic approach. We're wrapping that pipe that's rusting in a waxy product to protect it from the water. They also maintain 23 pumps and motors, medium high horsepower motors, pumps. We replace three flow meters, two in pipelines and one's an open channel flow meter. Dozens of valves have been serviced, and they've done repairs on our trash racks. And the mechanic side, the bottom set of points, the mechanics maintain 43 on-road vehicles, 31 off-road vehicles, so like bulldozers, 33 trailers or equipment that gets transported around on trailers, and three boats. So they stay busy. There's two mechanics with an intern, so they keep very busy. Here's my famous graph. I've brought it down to two lines, but the blue line here is the storage capacity. So out of that 25,000, we can keep in the district facilities. That's the blue line at the top. The dark blue is how much we've actually stored at any given time. So today is all the way on the right. A year ago is all the way on the left. it's interesting to compare to a year ago because we were coming out of Hurricane Hillary a year ago. So things got refilled. That's why the line is higher on the left side. The orange line is the Prado storage. So you can see it really filled up in January, and we got it all the way empty in June. And then that's when you see the blue line start to drop, is after we have Prado emptied. So here's kind of the same information in a tabular form. Currently, we're not storing any water at Prado. Santiago Basin's got 6,700 acre feet there, about half full. The Warner System's got 3,700 acre feet. Burris has a 470. Burris is another spot where we don't dewater it all the way for cleaning because of its depth and fish population. It makes it very difficult there. Miller, Kramer, and Miraloma are doing the work for GBRS right now. We have La Palma cleaning, you'll see here in a photo. So all in, the storage is over 11,000 currently, which leaves 14,000 available as we're heading into storm season. Here is NOAA's seasonal forecast. So they were completely wrong the last 2 years, but here it is for this year. It's, you know, we're right on the border of the tan color, which means they're predicting precipitation below average. So that's where we stand. And this is October, December. If they predict all the way out through March, it's still brown. So here I'm going to do the tour through the forebay with some drone shots. So again, I did this in April. Everything was full of water. So now you'll see kind of the empty conditions. So here's the head gates by Imperial. You see that building on the center right bottom. That's where we take the water out of the river into the weir ponds. So those three, four ponds you see in a row there on the right, their job is to desilt to get the clogging sediment to drop out of the water before we put it to the main basins. It might be hard to tell, but the water level in those is very low. We've cleaned all the vegetation off the sides, and we're hoping if we have enough time that we'll pull some of that deposited sediment out of the floor of those this year. So moving downstream, the river is there on the left, and the off river there. Got it. Thank you. They got a nice break on Zoom. Further downstream is our next rubber dam. This one's deflated. It's over here on the left. But that's where we call the Five Cove rubber dam. It can push into the Five Cove basins. This is where the carbon diversion channel comes down from the Brea area. But yeah, you see the Five Coves, Lincoln in the back, Burse in the very back. Moving downstream again, Lincoln there, dry, Burris, the water level is quite low. So we, was it about 15 years ago, there was a project to create a space in Burris that we could clean. So that's exposed. If we have time, we'll get in there and clean that space as well. And you can see on the left, the river stops. So we have about 2 more miles of the river that we could percolate in. We just don't have the current water incoming to do that. So shifting over to Villa Park, orange, here's Santiago Basin. So Santiago's technically 3 different basins, the Smith, the Blue Diamond, and the Bond. So it's about half full in terms of volume right now. And the creek goes off there to the right. moving up to the upper system, here's Anaheim Lake, very, very dry spot right now. Mini Anaheim in the bottom of the photo. Up in the top, you can see Kramer, Miller, Miraloma. If you squint, you might see La Palma there. So I'm going to, my next view, I switch this. We're going to go to La Palma and look the opposite direction. So here's La Palma. You can see the equipment was actually in there yesterday when we took the photo cleaning. Mira Loma, you can see the aqua park has closed for the season. It's so the Mira Loma is getting dewatered to start cleaning next week. And Miller and Kramer. And here's my last graphic. This is a video. It's not current. It's from earlier this year. I just thought it was pretty cool to see the bulldozers working in the river, and how the birds interact here. But so that they are agitating the surface to keep that clogging material suspended in the water to move, so that you keep percolation available there. But you can spot the birds. They're waiting for lunch to get dug up for them. So, yeah, that's it. That's the update on the recharge. If there's any questions.
Director Wigand, did you have it?
I don't know how to read, and I press the request to speak when I'm supposed to press the mic on, but I figured that out after the fact, and I can't turn it off. So, but thank you. But I do actually have a question now that I've thought of it. The standing water, do we ever have like a mosquito issue or anything when it comes to that throughout the year and the season? And what do we do with that working with vector control, or do we just try to move the water on our own? Like, how does, you know?
Yeah, good question. So, the mosquitoes really like standing water, like you mentioned. So we keep the water moving in almost all the locations. So the mosquitoes don't set up there. The midge, which is like a cousin to mosquito, does, but the midges don't bite like a mosquito does. So we also have a program where we have bird boxes. So we encourage swallows to live around our facilities. They eat millions of flies every day. So that's a what part of the outreach for it. We do coordinate with vector control. Usually we hear from them when we're holding water at Smith, part of Santiago Basin. And that's because the water is stagnant mixed with the vegetation there. It's a nice environment for mosquitoes. But typically we don't have that issue because the water level's down before peak mosquito season in the fall.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Green. And Ben, thank you for the presentation. In your slides, there are a few pictures showing dry basins. And do we have any issues with our neighbors about dust control related issues?
No. The basins are interesting, right? Because they're depressed. So actually, when you go down in them, there's no wind. So our poor maintenance guys, they go down there to work, you know, it might be a 95 degree day and they go down there to work in the basin and it's more above 100 because the wind just blows over the top. It doesn't go down in. The roads around the outside, like the river road, we water it regularly to keep the dust down. And then anytime we have heavy equipment working, we use the water truck to control the dust as well.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for the presentation. All the basins that you presented, there were 9 unclean areas. Are they ever clean, or how would that affect the quality of the water?
Sure. So the main spot, Santiago, it is extremely deep. It's an old quarry site. And so that quarry, before we bought the property, you know, they mined for a certain material and they left their spoils in the floor, the clogging material in the floor. So really at Santiago, we get most of the percolation through the walls, and the walls are very steep. So we can't clean them there. But we get wind action as the water level goes down and up. It actually cleans the banks. At that location.
So we never have to clean them.
We'd like to. We work towards doing that. It's just right now there's a pump station there too that's in the midst of repair. So we need that to operate in order to get the water out of that one too.
But in terms of the quality, the water quality, how scientifically, how does that affect quality of the water when you clean and when you don't clean? Or the basins, actually.
Sure. So when we say clean, we're really removing clay and silt sediment from the floor. And so that's not underneath that is the sand, right? Which is a big filter. So that material is not going into the aquifer anyways. It's just clogging the floor, preventing the passage. I don't know, there's some water quality folks in here, but I don't think we're impacting any of the water quality that way.
Yeah, even for basins that aren't cleaned, you still have fresh water coming in and some water percolating. So the water does not really get stagnant.
Thank you. Thank you for a great report. Okay, moving on to SAPA, Director Whitaker.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. Yesterday morning's Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority meeting was interesting. We received a validation report on our cloud seeding program. It was year one of the planned 4-year test. And Frank McDonough of the Desert Research Institute provided a great deal of data. Some really good visuals here, which I just wanted to point out, are contained in the packet for anyone that wants to look at a lot of the detail. But his best estimate, and it is certainly as much art as science to try to determine what effect cloud seeding has had on precipitation levels. He sampled at numerous sites throughout our watershed of what the levels were, and it was a mixed bag from throughout. The expected heaviest area would have been the San Bernardino Mountain area. And well, I'll make it very short. At least his best estimates were that we may have received somewhat over 4% up to about 11% total of gain in precipitation through this. I did a little back of the napkin estimate on what the value of that might be worth after the meeting, and it produced enough flow, enough water that we could possibly capture and utilize to be, depending on what you valued that raw untreated water at, somewhere between $7 million and $17 million of value. So I asked a cost estimate on what we had in the program at this point, even including the analysis and the studies as well. The ballpark that our general manager provided, Jeff Mosier, was that it would be a few a few hundred thousand dollars. So it would appear that if these estimates are close, it's a very good return on investment, at least in terms of water supply. He also contrasted our area with other areas of longer-term cloud seeding and what the expectations were, and then what our results appear to be. But this is just the first installment, and it'll take multiple years to try to determine whether this is being effective or not and whether it's somewhat reliable. He did explain a few things that were new to me as well, though. The flare units, one looks like a Christmas tree pretty much. They're CNGs, which is cloud nuclei generators, and we have automated high output generators. That's called an AHOG. So those are the type units that we have. The automated are remotely controllable, and the CNGs are manually controllable. They provide silver iodide dust along with a fuel butane, which the butane is completely consumed in the process, and the dust rises up to altitudes where it can spread that silver iodide dust to perhaps be the nuclei to create raindrops. And the primary goal is for more snowpack where possible. So that's why, certainly in the higher altitude areas in our watershed, is where we're mostly aiming at. Interesting thing about this is that we've had a lot of publicity recently, concerns about some of the flooding in the last 2 heavy years. And our first test was during this past year, which is one of the very record-setting seasons, rain seasons that we've had for a while. So there's concern about this year as we're looking at activating these for the second year of the test. And particularly, there was concern involving some of the recent fires, all the local wildfires. And we've had a number of these were really two parts of a report. The second part of the report was the staff has recommended to postpone year two cloud seeding pilot program operations, primarily because of concerns about burn scars in some of the major areas where flows might be expected. We've had the bridge fire, the line fire, the airport fire. The record fire, there are a number of smaller fires as well, and they maintain, a lot of them are on the perimeter of some of our areas, but like the line fire is almost completely contained within. And so there were parameters that were set originally on this test for suspension criteria. And the suspension criteria is with flood concerns, warm storm rain on snow. If we have a fair amount of snow and we get a warm storm, then that could create perhaps hazardous flows. If the freezing level is less than 8,000 feet, that can be reason for suspension. Quantitative precipitation forecast is 3 inches within 24 hours. So very heavy rain flows are expected. We would suspend the cloud seeding. Burn scars, there's an excessive threat of debris flow if we've had a heavy fire season. And we are also expected to coordinate with flood control districts. So as we were looking at the next year's criteria, all three flood control districts of our counties, of Riverside, San Bernardino, and Orange County, expressed concerns with our program going forward for this year. One other set of suspension criteria is winter storm warnings, flash flood warnings, severe thunderstorm warnings, and sustained winds more than 30 miles an hour at the sites. So all of this is something that would be regularly year to year to year, but in particular this year, it seemed that we had a number of triggers with those flood control districts expressing their concerns. And one other concern, excessive amount of sediment accumulation, particularly at Prado as well. So it looks like, and what happened was staff had made that recommendation. One of the members made a motion that the commission vote on that prospect. And so we did. It was a unanimous vote to suspend it for this year. So year two has been suspended. We'll still carry out the next 3 years as possible, as long as we don't have any other suspension criteria. But so it's a little bit of a mixed report. It's fairly preliminary. And the only other thing that that came up was in the study from McDonough, he sampled very many sites throughout to try to determine how much silver is accumulating as a result of these activities. And it came in really quite low, much lower than he expected. There are natural amounts of silver in the environment, but we were down to the 4 parts per trillion, which is less than in a lot of areas naturally as well. So there have been concerns expressed about what we're introducing into the environment. And even though the silver is very inert, and he made a point of it, that many of us who are up there in years have silver fillings even in our mouths right now. And so the concerns that we keep hearing from the public are whether or not we're exacerbating flood or mud flow or other problems, other potential disasters, and whether we're negatively affecting the environment. And at least from the standpoint, this expert from many, many years said that he has absolutely no concerns as far as what we're doing chemically to the area. And it remains to be seen who blames what for future floods or future problems of this sort. But the fires here locally had a much greater effect on what we were looking forward to in terms of evaluating whether we go forward this year or not. So that's pretty much it, unless there are questions. If there are any questions, happy to entertain them.
Any?
Okay. And I would advise anyone who wants to really look deeply into it, it's a pretty good report here. And that's all.
Very much.
Sure. Thanks.
Next, moving into our committee reports, property
information is in the packet.
Retirement. Director Amezcua.
Information's in the packet.
Okay. moving on to verbal reports. President's report.
Oh.
Anything else?
I do have a quick verbal report.
Okay.
Partly I was a few minutes late because I was attending our OCSAN Operations Committee meeting, and they're just back from Orange County, Florida, where we shipped one of our critical yes, exactly. Wow. So Rob Thompson was reporting on it, and we had loaned one of the units that we had at OCSAN to them, and they've been doing some trial studies, and it seems like things are going really quite well. And he's now expecting that we'll be able to put the supercritical water oxidation units installed at OCSAN as early as February or March. The one of the big benefits is it reduces the solid waste from OCSAN by 95%. So many truckloads that we haul up Bakersfield Way at great expense and some environmental costs as well, that's going to be greatly changed. He also pointed out that one of the results of supercritical water oxidation is it produces water, actually almost drinkable level water. He said it tastes better than GWRS water because it has some minerals in it. But so it sounds very positive. I asked a question right toward the end of it because I understood that we had some AQMD issues, and that's partly why we did the loaner to Orange County, Florida. So I asked, because what he described in the tests, I didn't see any problem there whatsoever. So I said, well, you have me scratching my head as to where our problem is with AQMD. The problem with AQMD was their testing equipment, when they were testing it here, it was showing absolute purity. It was showing no problems whatsoever. And so she thought the equipment wasn't working. So they couldn't really approve our going forward for a while, and that's where we were going to be delayed. That's why we did the loaner to Orange County, Florida. So as he described that, I said, oh, so our problem with AQMD is really that it's too good to be true. They just can't believe the results. And so that's why we're going to have a go-ahead on it. And it just seems very promising because it not only breaks the bonds of PFAS, but also a number of other problems as well, and just yields a very small amount of inert, actually usable mineral material, usable even for fertilizer purposes at the end. So that was very promising at the beginning. We heard a short while ago that there was a hitch or a delay, and now I'm really happy to report just a few minutes ago found out that full speed ahead on it. So,
congratulations.
Sorry for the long report, but okay.
Any other directors have a report?
I do. I just want to personally invite everyone on the board to the check presentation from Representative Correa for the OC Riverwalk project on October 23rd at 1 p.m. I just got notice of that today, and I'll make sure you all get emailed the invite. But it'll be at Arctic, and it's an exciting project that I hope we can partner on in the future. And this $1.6 million will help us move that forward in the planning and the calculations that we all are looking forward to seeing.
That was going to be my question. You buried the lead there, $1.6
million. Okay.
Director Bellado?
Yes, I should report that I traveled to Washington, D.C. Last week. I met with Representatives Lou Correa and Young Kim in their offices in the Rayburn Building to thank them for the earmarks they've carried for us on our PFAS treatment systems. And also to update them on legislation that we're supporting or opposing. As a result, Representative Correa came on board as a co-sponsor to H.R. 7944, which is a bill that will exempt water and wastewater purveyors from PFAS CERCLA liability. which is a big problem for us right now, is PFAS has been determined to be a hazardous substance under CERCLA, and which puts us in the chain of liability for plaintiffs. So that was great that he did that, and he's going to pursue getting that legislation passed for us. And that's my report. Thank you. I don't recall. I'm going to have to Google that.
Director Yao?
Yeah, thank you, President Green. I should report before John steals my thunder. General Manager Kennedy, his lovely wife, and I attended Representative Napolitano's retirement party on September 21st in City of Industry. As you probably know, Representative Napolitano is the most senior California and Hispanic ranking member in the House Committee of Transportation and Infrastructure, and she has been truly a wonderful friend to the district and also Southern California, that she has brought so much money back to our region, LA and Orange County. It was well attended. Hundreds of people were there. And at one point they asked that just the elected officials to stand up. And I think half of the room was filled with elected officials, Republican and Democrats alike. Many people spoke, including Yorba Linda Water District's general manager, Mark Toy, and Adan Ortega Jr., and also the CEO of Metro, Stephanie Wiggins, was there as well. So, wonderful event. Thank you. I was so glad to be part of it. Before I forget, you know, Randy Figg, John Kennedy, and Mike Marcus worked on that repricing of the WIFIA loan. And, that action saved Orange County, I think, what, $80 million? Something like that. Yeah. It's just chump change, right? And the staff done excellent work, and a lot of it, a lot of hard work is done here at the Orange County Water District. And, you know, Napolitano, Representative Napolitano plays a big part to ensure that things go smoothly behind the scenes. So, I'm surely going to miss her. I think a lot of us will as well. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, I'll move on to President's report. At our AQUA September 20th meeting, we passed a two-year budget. Everybody seemed to be on board with our strategic. Bad news that our former, our past president of AQUA, Betty Boatman, died September 9th. General Manager.
Two quick items. Yesterday, we had our friends from Singapore, the PUB here. They had at least 25 people, and including their CEO. A lot of young new engineers, and it was kind of exciting. They all wanted to go drink the water. So we had them here all day, gave them several presentations, and talked about our programs and policies, and they were like sponges and just wanted to learn about Orange County Water District. So that went very well. And then yesterday we found out that our PFAS grant application with the state board for the Tustin project, and we have like 13 or 14 separate applications in, but for the Tustin project, we were able to get the grant amount increased from 5 million to 10 million. So that was good news.
Congratulations.
So we're still working on all fronts for PFAS money. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I do have one kind of a macro issue. I don't know where to place it on the I have a question here. I mean, when we're talking about water quality and every meetings that we have and all the events and functions, it's all related to water, of course. Do we have any empirical data or any ranking in terms of the quality of water that we produce or provide as compared to, say, or any other neighboring? I guess I don't want to be just parochial that, okay, we're doing a good job here.
Yeah.
for managing what we need to manage, but how are we doing compared to, say, water quality in Texas, for example, Arizona? So we can look at this from an empirical perspective vis-a-vis Northern California, other jurisdictions, whether it's regional, state, national, or even international. Do you have anything even out to that?
I'm not sure. We're going to have to go talk to the staff if we can find some comparisons with other regions. There is a database out there where you can look at the water quality of other areas and compare yourself. So we'll come back to
sure,
the board
sure. I mean,
with what we can find.
Yeah, because
yeah.
In a yeah. way, we're kind of operating, I don't want to say in the dark, but it's kind of parochial.
Yeah.
To say that, okay, we're doing here, we're crossing the T's and dotting the I's and doing everything that we need to keep the water safe and provide quality water. But to what standards? I frankly don't know.
And I can mention the city of Santa Ana routinely wins the best tasting water in a national competition.
We sure do. Yes, we do.
So they have some sweet wells, and they draw water from. And I think they've won that contest at least 3 or 4 times. So anyway, we have that going for us.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to look at, because I'm sure there are so many criteria, and how you judge this or how you analyze the quality and even the competency of how we do things.
Okay, we'll report back. Okay.
I just had a question about Betty Boatman's passing. There will be a memorial for Betty at 2 p.m. on October 10th at 233 Gregory Lane, Pleasant Hill, California. That, I believe, is her senior center. That's all the information.
Madam Chair, would it be appropriate to adjourn our meeting here in her honor? Oh, okay.
But thank you.
Sorry, I stepped on your toes.
But we have to hear from. Okay, General Counsel.
Thank you for the segue. we have, I just want real quickly, end of the legislative session, the governor signed various bills, some of which are relevant, some of which are not. AB 24-1243, which I brought up to the board before, deals with the Levine Act, amendments to the Levine Act. It was signed on Monday. So I have a memo ready for the board. Look for that in the next day or two. And with that, we have one closed session, very brief, for a conference of legal counsel to discuss existing litigation per government code section 54956.9D in the case of Irvine Ranch Water District versus OCWD. And with that, I would recommend we recess to closed session.
Okay. And I would like to recess in honor and in memory of Betty Boatman. Thank you.
Okay.
We returned from closed session to discuss the IRWD versus OCWD case, and there are no reportable items.
Okay. We are adjourned at 6:30.